Good morning.
Good morning.
Let me get my glasses. So, before I start, I want to say thank you to the temple for the dedication to the people suffering in Ukraine. Thanks. And though I wrote this before, I know there's a lot of people here whose hearts and minds are with loved ones and family and the Ukraine, and so I'd like to dedicate this talk to those people suffering in the Ukraine. Homage to the Buddha. Homage to the Dharma. Homage to the Sangha. So this talk is about time. So actually, a year and a little longer, I was taking a class with Kakumio on Dogen, and he had us reading some material. And in it, Dan Tigan-Layton said, "You really can't understand Dogen unless you understand Buddhist time." I thought that was such an intriguing thought, and I just dove right in. And I talked to some students and said, "Would you be interested in studying time with me, Buddhist time?" And I right away had a class put together on Zoom. And that's not too surprising, because as I talked to people about would they like to study Buddhist time, they said, "Oh, yeah. There's just never enough time in my day to fit everything in." Another student said, "Well, if I had enough time, I would never have to be late again." Or the proverbial finish the novel. So the problem with time is there's never enough of it to get to what really matters. So what is that that really matters to us? If we had enough time, we would finally be able to have that perfect balance between life, work life, and home life. We'd get up, we'd do our meditation, we'd go to work, answer our emails, finish our project, work on our project, go to the gym, fix a nutritious meal, and spend time with our families, and get enough sleep. So I think just the way I said it, you might pick up that this will never happen. Never. So there's the rub, right? Because things are always popping up. We get a flat tire, someone's sick at the office and we can't finish our project, someone sends us a zinger email, and off we go, and we don't get it done. So in ordinary time, there's a timeline. Nothing, nothing, nothing. Oh, we're born. Not so much. First memory, first infatuation, graduation, awesome trip, and so on, and then we die. It would be funny, but. And when we think like this, of course, there's a beginning and end, birth and death, and an endless stream of it, birth and death. And everything we do has to fit in this fixed timeline. And I have a little note here. And oh, by the way, it takes longer to do these things when you're older, just for you younger people. And in the end, aren't we just unwilling to accept these limits? Aren't we just unwilling to accept that we're actually going to die? And underneath all that, I've discovered It interferes with my wish to believe that I have ultimate control of my life. And just to add to our troubles before we get to the good stuff, we're always having to deal with impermanence. That once-in-a-lifetime chance that drops away. When we think we have everything put together and something happens. We lose our job. Our spouse dies. Our home, I had one of my students' home caught on fire. All our sandcastles get washed out to sea. It's like time just slips through our fingers. So in the temple where I practiced, at the end of a full day of sitting, someone would go out in the hallway and shout back into the zendo, "Life and death is a great matter. Impermanence is swift. Practice without delay." And then to just drive that home, they'd hit a mallet on a big wooden board. Bam, bam, bam. And there you were at the end of your sitting day going, "Geez, did I go to sleep or do I practice?" Now here, they're so much kinder. They give you a little tea and a little cookie. They chant the Vespers. It's so sweet. I love it. Oh, it's so sweet. So although we might experience time in an ordinary way, our ancestors in Buddhism tell us this is not how time actually, in reality, is. And they changed the frame of reference from one of samsara, where we never have enough time. And one of the things that shifts that Buddhism makes is they say time exists only in relation to space. So when we chant, it's time and space. And this turns out to be kind of important. So without the phenomenal world, the world of objects, there is no such thing as time. There is no time. And without time, there is no phenomenal world. So that's something to contemplate. And I've reflected on this over the year, and it's surprising to me how deeply this changes how I look at things. It turns impermanence from something sentimental to a profound teaching. Time becomes the activity of our life. We are time. As Dogen says, we are time being. Fully expressing in this moment, and this moment expands throughout space and time. Whether we know what we're doing or not, we are fully expressing the Dharma. The teachings point out that space and time is so vast that it's beyond our imagination. So anything you can think of, no, it's beyond that. If you can conceive of it, that's not it. So it's more than that. So I picked out a passage from the Lotus Sutra, the lifetime of the Buddha, to tie in and give you a taste of this, because it's so beautiful. "Since I became Buddha, innumerable hundreds of thousands of billions of countless numbers of eons have passed. For countless eons, I have taught the Dharma ceaselessly. teaching and transforming innumerable hundreds of millions of living beings, enabling them to enter the Buddha way in order to liberate the living as skillful means I appear to enter nirvana. Yet truly, I am not extinct. I am always here teaching the Dharma. I'm always here, but due to my divine powers, perverse living beings fail to see me, even though I'm always close. Isn't that beautiful? So, even though I can't and don't always see Buddha operating in the Sendo, or right in this moment, he's there. Buddha's presence is here. He's always close. And to add to that, I didn't find the passage, but there's a place where they talk about space, and they talk about space, fields of space, where they take up a mountain and they grind it down into little bitty sand, and then the Buddhas walk, endless miles or endless whatever the measurement, and drop one grain of sand. And that continues until the end, and then, of course, there's another beginning. So in Buddhism, there's these vast, they want us to encourage us to live into vastness and infinity. And what is that? One of the students from my class took a trip to Utah during the time we were studying. And she went to Capitol Reef National Park, and she went out with a naturalist, and the naturalist was talking about the formations, the rock formations, and they were facing one, and he said, "We now know that this rock face is 270 million years old." And the student said, had a Buddha moment. Buddha appeared to her. And even though when she told the story, we were just hearing words, it was quite clear that at that moment, she was being taught with skillful means. Because she realized her own insignificance. Her problems that had really plagued her for quite some time felt insignificant against this face that was 270 million years old. Her life came up against something unfathomable. And she felt lighter. Her problems, she said, felt like specks of dust in a cosmic dance. How special was that? What a treat for our class. When we think of impermanence with this kind of vastness of time, it can appear very different than time slipping through our fingers. Time becomes center stage. It is the ongoing, flowing energy that weaves our lives together with all beings throughout countless eons. Katagiri Roshi, who wrote the book Each Moment is the Universe and is My Dharma. He was my teacher, but I'm in the lineage of Katagiri. Writes, at this time when this happens, observing impermanence, realizing emptiness, and deeply understanding that everything is interconnected and nothing has its own solid form, we actualize emptiness in oneness with forms of daily life. So included in this vastness, another aspect of Buddhist time is that, like space, time is multidimensional. So instead of the linear time that we generally speak of or experience, where this happens, then this happens, and then this happens, In the Flower Ornament Sutra, they talk about time as an array. So when we chant 10 directions in the morning, the Flower Ornament Sutra actually describes what that is. So there's the past, the present, and the future. Here we go. There's the past past, the past present, the past future, and future past, future present, future future. And then the 10th one is that all of these are the inner fusion of these, all these times. All this, it says, being the one instance of the presence. So that is quite vast too. Then the phrase in the Lotus Sutra, I am always here, but due to my divine powers, perverse living beings fail to see me, even though I'm always close, seems a little more interesting, a little more possible. So although there is this time that we experience at, for example, in an hour, we won't be here. We will all be on to our various lives. Even though that timeline is also existing, it's not just the full story. And it's very, very important we contemplate this for our spiritual well-being and growth. Katagiri calls it ordinary time and bodhisattva time. So I thought that was kind of interesting. And for those who don't know bodhisattvas, they are divine archetypes or divine beings that help us out. And when I did that, I thought about the bodhisattva vows, which are vast and beyond comprehension, beyond our ability to complete. So beings are numberless, and I vowed to save them. Delusions inexhaustible. I vowed to end them. Dharma gates boundless. I vow to enter them, and Buddha way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it. That's a vow. But what I think Katagiri means when he says bodhisattva time, I think he means we have to take care of our life. Contrary to looking at vastness, we might think we have time to waste. When we look at time as vastness, we might think we got times to waste. Or it doesn't really matter. But again, being Buddhism, it's just the opposite. If we want to spend our time on what really matters, we should consider this carefully. Katagiri says, fixing problems is important, but if you build your life around this, your primary way of life, that way of life leaves you in bewilderment. Because no matter how hard you try to fix everything, as we laughed about earlier, we cannot. Your inbox will continue to get filled. Your plans will continue to go awry, and you will always have another project coming your way. What I found is that I use these activities to keep me busy so I don't have to look at what matters most. The work of maturing my life. Because to do that, I have to surrender to my most vulnerable self. I have to truly feel the boredom, the loneliness, impatience, and be with it. And And you have to be with it until something opens up, till you face that wall that's 270 million years. When we do this, Katagiri says, we touch who we really are. We see the vastness of our life and phenomenal existence. He says, if you want to learn the total picture of human life, you have to tune in to the rhythm of life, the melody of the universe. Doing this is called spiritual life. It is arousing the thought of enlightenment. When you really devote yourself to doing something, you go beyond the time process and forget time. This is the characteristic of Bodhi mind that is called going beyond time and space. So that's kind of my talk. But because I like to end with poetry, I have a poem by Han Chen. The peach blossoms would like to stay, but the moon and wind blow them on. You won't find those ancient men, those dynasties are dead and gone. Day by day, the blossoms fall. Year by year, the people go. Where the dust blows through the heights, there once shone a silent sea. So, thank you so very much.
Right. We're now going to do questions. If you're in the Zendo and you have a question, raise your hand and I'll bring you the microphone. If you are on Zoom, you can either write your name in the chat box and you will be unmuted, or you can write your question or comment in the chat box and Yutone will read them aloud for you.
Hi. Talking about time, whether you're young or old, and knowing who you are, I think is very important. I grew up dancing, then played soccer, and did different things with my life, and now I feel good about myself doing different things with my life. So yeah, thank you.
You're very welcome, Annie.
Just so it really sticks in my memory, can you say again the different types of time there is? Like there was the future, past?
Yes. There's the past, present, and future of this present moment. So your past and your future and your present. And then your past, there's the past, so your ancient past, your past, present, past, future. And then the future is the past, future, the future, past, the future, present, and the future, future. And then you have to bring them all together and infuse them.
So those are like what we use to conceptualize as past, present, future, or the past, present, future, and then what we will conceptualize as past, present, and future, and what we do conceptualizes past, present, and future, and bringing them all together?
Something. Thank you, Ginkgo.
Sorry, I'm doing my best.
So, kind of like poetry, you don't want to get too wrapped up in it. It's more like the mystery of it. So usually we think of it as our past is our own life, timeline. So this is like expanding it way out into, I love the word array of time. And what might that be?
Thank you.
You're welcome.
We have a request from Zoom that when someone gets the microphone, if they feel comfortable sharing their name, it would be really nice for us to know who's speaking. And then Zoom is clear other than that.
This is Anand for those on Zoom. Just to follow up to that question about time, because it is mysterious. One of the things that I have found helpful in practice is to realize that the past is always malleable, that we tend to think of the past as whatever happened, like that's the facts and that's it. But as you practice, the relationship with that shifts over time. And so you actually can reinvent the past. And so this idea of here are the facts, here's how I related to that at the time, here's how I related to whatever that was a month ago, here's now. And so those three dimensions, and also how I think of my future is really different now than the way I thought of it 20 years ago. And so those, I find those dimensions really helpful, and that there's always the nexus right now. All of that is changeable. All of that can be reinvented. Our relationship with that can change it, is how I've thought of that. Thank you, Fish, for your talk.
You're welcome. And I like how people answer my question.
We have a comment from Patrick on Zoom. It seems to me that the present itself is just a mental convention. By the time the brain has translated data and fitted it into a story, it is already the past.
Thank you, Patrick.
Hi, thanks for your talk. I found myself reflecting on the vow that I came up with, which I kept going back and forth and trying to figure out, but how do I say this? What I came up with was continue to practice or continue practice. And after hearing your talk, I think I would change that to be practice.
Ooh, I love that.
So,
because we are.
Yeah, that is exactly what's happening. So, because the continue does imply that timeline.
Yeah.
And so there was something not quite right. And so your talk helped me illuminate what was not quite fitting for me there. So I appreciate that.
And Genko, I want to say your being practice is beautiful and teaches me all the time. Thank you.
We're all clear on Zoom.
Can't see me, but hello, Flying Fish at Taku.
Hi, Haku.
Zoom can't see me either, but hello. So I find myself in a transitional kind of life and not sure exactly what to make of it. So I'm asking for advice when you've practiced with this. And there's a time when busyness is appropriate, it seems, and that's what the moment requires. And there's a time when it's extra. And what are your cues for when that sense of wanting to get things done, the doingness of things, becomes more about you and less about what's showing up?
Well, I really appreciate that comment because I know this really well. So I find that sometimes I'm overwhelmed. What's happening is too much for me to handle. And I consciously choose to be busy till I can settle down enough to be present to it. And so I consciously use busyness versus the, and my, what did we do? Intentions for this practice period was to not hide in denial, really is what I wanted to say. And I'm catching myself more and more doing that from working with time. So I think it's helpful if you have a question that you can always kind of let pop up, and mine is, you know, what don't I want to see? Mm. What don't I want to see? But sometimes we are overwhelmed, and we have to take care of that. Thank you, Haku.
Thank you very much.
Clear on Zoom.
Hi, it's Kakuan.
Hi, Kakuan.
The living and dying business is really weird, man. Yeah. Like, thoughts of like taking care of my old dad before he died. He got a diagnosis for a short period of time to be alive, and then that was it, and that was somewhat unexpected for him. Mm-hmm. And reflecting on how, like, I had all these ideas about, like, how you're supposed to act, you know, and what you're supposed to care about before you pass, right? Like, you're supposed to have all these weird feelings about it. And that wasn't, he didn't do that. He just kind of kept doing what he was doing and accomplished one particular task about which he was pleased and passed. And it's just so weird. Like, actual time observed and actual, like, living and dying observed is so weirdly different than, like, what we do all the time. And I'm still so confused by that, Fish.
Yeah, it's feels very sacred, that time. And then I think we actually are in the presence then. I mean, I think we're actually actualizing the moment. There's, you know, intellectually we, you know, all know we're going to die. But there is that moment for us where at some point it becomes real. It becomes totally real. And it's quite a shock. It's quite a shocking thing. So what is the, do you have a question? I maybe didn't get the question.
Just like what, how do we, man, like, It still feels to me like there's some kind of like Bodhi time is real time, and yeah. You know, like, put gas in the car time is like pretend delusion time, and I know this isn't true, and I keep wanting it to be true, and I keep chasing something that's not here when it's here, and like, please help.
Now, who's your teacher?
Ouch.
Yeah. Well, one thing that I did catch when you were saying is I just kind of want to lift up a little bit is, you know, filling your car with gas is not separate from Vast time or Bodhisattva time. They are one in the same. And that's kind of the maturing of our life, is to step into that.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Tony?
Yeah, excuse me. Yeah, what was just said has kind of brought up another memory for me, and it sort of fits in. I think maybe about 15 years ago, I had my first kind of existential scare, health scare. You know, it turned out to be nothing, but I went through the usual things of, you know, tremendous anxiety and so on, and then tremendous relief when it went away. And then the first idea was, you know, the usual hostage to the future, right? I've got all this time back. Now I'm really, really, really going to use it, because somehow this is extra time. And of course, within about 2 weeks, I was falling back into my perfectly ordinary life the way it had been before. And what this brought up for me was that, you know, there is no quantity of time. It's a kind of zero-sum thing. However much time you have, You have exactly the same opportunities and exactly the same problems. And there is no, it doesn't accumulate in any sense, you know, that it is, that you don't get away with anything. Time is the medium in which you practice, however much of it or little of it there is. So I think I just wanted to pass that on. And the other one was when you were talking about the mountain, and that I sort of had that experience, but maybe in a slightly different way. It was, look at this mountain. I suddenly realized it's ancient. This is this wonderful ancient being. But at the same time, it's just a mountain. It's just this lump of rock. One second it's a lump of rock. The next second it's, oh my God, it's been here forever. And, you know, it's not going to notice when I'm gone, right? I just thought I'd pass both of those on.
Well, nature is always has lots of ways to teach us. So it's always good to pay attention. Thank you, Tony.
Thank you.
We have another on Zoom, if there's nothing in the Zendo. Right. From Chad. I like your visualization of time as an array. It implies an interdependence of the aspects of time. How do we use this interdependent array of time in our practice?
When we really live into that, it changes our whole life. It changes what we spend our time on, what we do, how we relate to everything and everyone. And the only way I know how to go about that is to practice. I come here to practice. That's the only thing I know that helps me to keep it in my mind. Kind of like Tony said, yeah, you have that event and you go, wow. And then it just closes, that window closes back up. But our practice, as we practice daily, we just keep opening and opening and opening. And I don't think that ever ends, does it?
Not yet.
You know, and we have to keep, Kategori Roshi used to say, we are Buddha, we are Buddha in nature. And we have some work to do. You know, we have our karma that we keep bumping up against. And taking care, how do we take care of that? It brings us to our humanity, brings us to our humanness. Because everybody in this room wants to be happy. Everybody in this room is working with some karma. Can we just help each other? You know, that's it. That's the interdependence. Let's help each other.
Another on Zoom?
Be grateful. And be Jay. Grateful. Thanks, you, Tone.
Yes. We have Jay is next. I can find you if you can unmute Jay. Ask to unmute. There we go.
Okay. I'd been thinking a lot about time lately and the idea of no birth, no death. I'm wondering if you have anything more practical to share about trying to touch the past in the present. I had been listening to a talk in which somebody had been talking about their husband who had died. And she said, if he became only a memory, he would surely only be in the past and would truly be dead. And that her task was to touch him in the present so as not to kill him, for sure. Could you, I guess I'll just leave it at that and then see if you have any comments.
Well, that brought up a practice that I've done that I don't share very often. But, and so I hope this helps you, but I'm not sure if it's hitting the mark. So I often wondered how I ended up in Buddhism, because I was very, very active in my church at the time. For most of my life, and there's more stories to that, but at one time, we were moving our temple, and the temple bought the very building that my dad worked in. And we moved into that building, and one of my offices was his office, which was very, very weird for me. And when Reb Anderson came to do a session, that was the bedroom he stayed in. And in Dokusan, we kind of had this interesting exchange, like he was doing something in that room to just send merit to my younger self, because I told him a story about my younger self. And I felt like, oh, he was helping me as a child to awaken. And Buddhas and ancestors are always doing this. They're always sending us the call to awaken. And I don't know if that's helpful at all, Jay, but I guess just take it for what it's worth. I also send myself loving kindness to my deathbed as a practice. You know, that I may be at peace and ease and that. So.
One last one from Zoom. See, from Useki. When I think about this array of time, I wonder, am I, as the one perceiving it, the center of this array? If my future imagined or far or near or my past mistaken or misremembered or almost remembered are the intended meanings of the different parts of the array of times, is it wrong of me to center myself in this way? Or would it be pretentious or dangerous of me to try to see outside of myself as a point of reference?
Yeah, I'd like to see you under the care of a teacher if you're going to be doing work like that. I think you have to get outside of yourself. I mean, the whole point is that it is beyond our imagination, beyond our capacity. So just the notion that if you're, you know, I'll go back to Thich Nhat Hanh when he says 100% of our thinking is delusion. And so you have to be careful with what you're doing when you start placing yourself in other times.
We're all clear on Zoom.
I'm Cruz. Thank you for your talk. And, you know, as you just touched on, thinking is a it's delusional. I go back to a 270 million year old rock. And then I think past. Yet the rock isn't in the past. It is a present vibration of particles. It is in the thinking that my mind becomes deluded to believe that there's a past. In the way we think of past, present, and future, if time doesn't exist.
But time exists and vastness exists.
Okay. So when I do Zazen, for the life of me, I can't get myself to do it with eyes open. So in eyes closed, there is no time. So in terms of a rock that's 270 million years old and is sitting here to experience now, is this the past present as you speak of?
I wouldn't worry about labeling it. I would live just, that's for you to digest. That's for you to wonder about.
So nothing is permanent, by the way.
Right.
Except laundry, right? Thank you for your talk.
You're very welcome. I think that's it. Is that it, everybody? Yes, thank you.